Hi, thank you very much for joining us for this webinar. Microsoft is really trying to make it easy for their ISVs to move from on-prem to the cloud. It is such an important part of the business development for its ISVs that they've invested in this series of webinars to help you address the questions that are most compelling for you. I've been working with ISVs for more than 20 years, helping them with their business development strategy. So in the early days, we worked with mainframe software, and we did some mid-range, and then it was the client server and the thin client. And then we had the ASP bubble for a little bit, and now it's the cloud. So it really puts us in a position to see technology as a continuum, see business models as a continuum, rather than being disruptive. We've been partnering with Microsoft since 2006, and over the last 4 or 5 years, we've been really focused on the cloud and what changes in the business model are necessary for companies to make in order to be successful with a subscription-based business. This is part of a series of webinars. There are 6 in total. If you missed the first one, it is available online. You should have the link to that. So on the first one, we talked about basic decisions, the strategic decisions companies need to make as they look at moving to the cloud. Today, we'll be talking about selecting the right target markets for your cloud solution. And then the next modules would look at your sales and marketing strategy, pricing considerations, which is a big question for a lot of ISVs, the financial metrics that help you govern your business, and then finally, the legal issues that change when you move from on-prem to the cloud. There will be a live Q&A at the end of this session. I'll be logged on. I'll be very happy to answer your questions, so please stick around for that and save up your questions and make sure that you participate in that particular part of this. Today, we're going to talk about the target markets, and the areas that we want to explore are going after your existing clients and prospects. How do you use SaaS to broaden your market opportunities, look for new market opportunities? Are international markets a choice for you? And then finally, how do you position your solution for the enterprise market? So let's start with the existing clients. For a lot of on-premise ISVs, this is going to be the path of least resistance. And this is moving your existing customers from on-prem to the cloud. And you say, well, why would I want to do that? If they're ready to buy an on-premise license, why wouldn't I just collect the cash? Well, a lot of them aren't ready today. What you want to do is look at your client base and identify the customers that are getting close to the replacement cycle and that have options. You don't want to go to customers that have bought in the last year or two. They've made the investment. They want to get a return on the investment that they've made in the on-premise license. But if you go to customers that have been using your technology for the last 3, 4, 5 years, they're going to be getting closer to a replacement cycle. And that's when they're going to be much more open to looking at a cloud solution. And it's important for you to be proactive because they are probably getting marketing messages from competitors that do have a cloud solution as well. The other thing is if you can move an on-premise customer into the cloud earlier than they would normally go through the replacement cycle for on-prem, you're actually going to increase your revenues. So let's say you're in the ERP space and you have a normal 8-year replacement cycle. That means you're collecting, you've sold your license maybe 5 years ago, you've been collecting maintenance at 18-20%, and you're looking at doing that for the next 3 years before your customer is going to be looking for a new solution or upgrading to your new version. If you can move that customer into the cloud solution in year 5, you're going to be getting a higher revenue stream from each of those customers, and you're also going to be locking them into newer technologies, much less likely that they would go someplace else. So for a lot of you, you can actually start to increase your revenues rather than taking a hit on cash flow. Your existing customers could represent a new source of incremental revenues. You should also look at deals that you lost over the last 3, 6, 9 months, especially if you lost a deal on price. If you've been talking to customers that were very price sensitive, maybe they didn't choose you, maybe they didn't buy anything, maybe they decided just to stick with what they had because they couldn't afford the upfront investment. So look at your funnel for the last 12 months, look at the ones that you lost, especially the ones that you lost because of price. Go back to those customers and see if you can reopen the discussion by offering a subscription model. One of the really compelling advantages for a lot of ISVs with the cloud is that it opens up new market opportunities. If we look at the traditional way of segmenting the market, it's a pyramid. We have the enterprise market, the Fortune 500, the Fortune 2000, Fortune 5000 for some companies at the top of the pyramid. Then you get the mid-market and you get SMB at the base. And what we've seen as technology has evolved is that every new technology broadens the base. 20, 30 years ago, when the technology was just delivered on mainframes, it was a very small segment of the overall enterprise market that could afford that. Then we got the mid-range machines, and then we got client-server, which really expanded the mid-market SMB. And now we get the cloud, which expands the bottom part of that market even more. And then as we move into mobility, we'll see that it increases. Now, the benefit of this is that the absolute number of prospects increases dramatically. There are certain product categories where they estimate, for example, BI and CRM, where the absolute number of prospects could be 4 to 7 times higher for a SaaS solution. The downside, though, is that each of those transactions is going to be smaller. You may have a higher number of customers, you'll have a higher deal velocity, but you're getting less money for each transaction that you conclude. In the SMB space, and this is where we're seeing a lot of the higher levels of adoption, it's a cash flow issue, not a budget issue. There are a lot of companies that can't afford to spend, for example, $25,000 on a BI solution plus the services to do the implementation, but they're willing to spend $2,000 a month to access the same functionality. So this is where you look at your customer base today, and can you broaden the market at the low end by approaching customers that previously couldn't afford to buy your on-premise solution, but that have a monthly cash flow that allows them to get the same functionality because they're paying for it on a subscription basis. I'll give you an example of this, and this is a fairly extreme example, but it's a good example. One of the companies that we worked with is called PROS. They're out of Houston, and they sell a very complex enterprise solution for price optimization that's sold into very specific verticals and only to large companies. They've now come out with a SaaS version of the product that is much more standardized. If you look at the market for them for their on-premise solution, it's companies that are spending, are willing to spend $1 million and up on the license and the customization and the implementation. That limits the market. For their SaaS product, the entry-level price is $20,000. They have three price tiers, $20,000, $60,000, and $200,000 roughly. And what that does for them, it changes the market potential dramatically. In the United States, there may be 500 companies that are of a right size and in the right vertical markets for their pricing optimization. For the SaaS product, it's 50,000. That means that they've increased their market size by a factor of 100 by moving into SaaS. And they're opening up a new market segment, so this is incremental revenue. And they're not cannibalizing. They're selling this to companies that couldn't afford the $1 million plus solutions. Now let's take a look at geography, because one of the marketing wonders of SaaS is that you can sell your solution anywhere. Now the question is not can you, but do you really want to? What's the benefit to you? So I'll just give you a very quick travelogue here of some of the main markets, and we'll drill down on some of the numbers. The United States represents 60% of the SaaS spending worldwide. The US is roughly 35% of IT, enterprise software, on-premise software, but there's 60% of the SaaS spending. Europe has very strict privacy laws. We're going to come back to this in the legal issues. Things like the Patriot Act have a very big impact, and it limits the market, slows down the market adoption in Europe. Latin America is an interesting market, and I'll cover that in a few slides. Rapidly growing, same time zone for US companies, potentially a very interesting market for a lot of companies. What we're seeing in emerging markets is that the SaaS adoption is going very quickly. The reason for that is a lot of companies, even in the SMB space, haven't made an investment in their own physical infrastructure. They don't have a server and 10 desktops for their in-house staff. In the United States, most companies have that. So what we're seeing in the emerging markets is that they are leapfrogging the physical infrastructure. So instead of going out and buying a server and 10 desktops, they're moving directly into the cloud. We've seen the same thing with mobile adoption. Mobile phone adoption is much higher than fixed phone adoption in the emerging markets because companies and countries don't have to make the investment in the infrastructure. Japan, surprisingly, has been a relatively slow adopter of SaaS for the market size. The reason for that, especially in the enterprise market, is that the Japanese market is dominated by facilities management companies. So the large companies, mid-size and large companies, outsource all of their IT to facilities management companies. And today, those companies see the cloud as being competitors. So they're being a barrier. They represent a barrier to adoption in the enterprise space in Japan. I want to touch on China. The reason for that is because China has become the second largest market for IT products generally. They just passed Japan, become the second largest market worldwide. And 10 years ago, any startup company that went to a VC had to have a China strategy as part of their business plan, or they couldn't get funding. Not the case for SaaS, and there are a number of reasons for this. First of all, culture. There's a cultural element in China where people prefer to buy rather than rent. So there's a cultural disinclination, if you will, to rent something on a perpetual basis if they can buy the same functionality up front. There's also the big brother aspect. A lot of companies don't trust their government to have access to a centralized database. So for a lot of companies, they prefer to control the data in their server or their desktop sitting under their desk rather than storing all of their confidential information in a server that can be hacked into. And government regulations. Government regulations are a very tough thing to overcome in China because in China, SaaS applications are actually classified as a telecom service. It's a telecommunications service. And what that means is that SaaS companies have to have a government license to provision those services. In order to provision those services and get a license, you have to be a Chinese entity. And that means that as a company, you have to, at the very least, have a joint venture where at least 50% of the ownership is held by a local company. What this means is that it is technically illegal for non-Chinese companies to provision SaaS applications and functionality to Chinese customers. It happens. Chinese customers are signing up for non-Chinese SaaS applications. But the risk for a company is that the government at some point just blocks off access to those services because it's technically illegal. So for these reasons, for a lot of companies, it's just not worthwhile spending time and cycles looking at the Chinese market. So let's look at the SaaS growth rates by region. And what we're seeing is, this is very interesting, that in the United States, Western Europe, and Japan, the more mature markets, the SaaS growth rate has actually started to level off a little bit. Up until 2011, from 2007 to 2011, the growth rate worldwide was running 24, 25, 26% per year. That's now leveling off in the established, more mature markets at 16, 17, 18%. The higher growth rates are still in the emerging markets. If you look at the spend, Western Europe is roughly 1/4 to 1/5 of the US, but that's Western Europe, and Western Europe is not one single market. Western Europe is 15 different countries with their own legislation, with their own cultures, with their own language. So those markets become very fragmented. Asia Pacific, same thing. It's $1 billion of spending on SaaS, but it represents very wide geographies, a lot of different countries, a lot of different cultures. And when you break that down by country, each individual country becomes a relatively small market opportunity. I want to touch on Latin America because for a lot of companies, this could be an interesting opportunity. One of the things to consider in Latin America is that the spending is dominated by two countries, Mexico and Brazil. Brazil by itself is over 50% of the software spend. So these percentages are on overall software and IT spending, but they map fairly closely to what the SaaS spending is by country. There are six countries that by themselves are responsible for 96% of IT spending in Latin America. This means that you really need to focus your attention, and if you're going into Latin America, it really just makes sense to focus on Brazil. It's 50% of the spend. So we looked at $1 billion worth of SaaS spending in Latin America. $500 million of that comes from Brazil. One of the elements of going international that you will run into is latency. This is a real issue for real-time applications. An ERP application, for example, that people are working on, they need to get that immediate response time, that's going to be a challenge if you're working in a market that's very far removed from a data center. One of the advantages of working with Microsoft is that they've got a global network of data centers, and they're constantly expanding that. So Australia's coming online, China's come online, Brazil is coming online. A couple of markets where latency is an issue, South Africa and India, because they are so far from the closest Azure database that pinging and the response time is long. We worked with a U.S. company that has a video software for education, and it's a real-time response. And when they measured the response time between South Africa and Amsterdam, it was six seconds, which was too long for a real-time application. So let's go back to the global spending by market. As you can see in this large green part of the pie, the US is 60% of the spend. And as an ISV, whether you are in the US or you are outside of the US, you have to look at that and say, well, I'm going to follow the money. It just makes so much sense to focus on the US. And that is really the conclusion when you're looking at different geographies. Focus your attention on the US. Other markets can be very complicated, very fragmented. When it comes to on-premise software, we very often discourage non-US companies from coming to the US because of the complexity of doing business, the level of competition, the amount of marketing that you have to do. But in a SaaS environment, this is where the market adoption is. This is where the spending is taking place. This is where the barriers to entry are actually the lowest. Now let's take a look at the enterprise market. For a lot of you that have on-premise solutions that you're selling into the enterprise space, you have to look at, well, what is the real market opportunity for us in the SaaS environment, in the enterprise market? What we see from Gartner, IDC, Forrester, all of the major analysts, what they focus on is the growth rate year on year, which looks fantastic. It's been, as I said, 24, 25, 26%. Last year was 16%. And that's a very big number. But it's a big number on a small base. The reality is that in the enterprise space worldwide, the spending on SaaS as a percentage of spending on software worldwide was still less than 5%. The increase in on-premise software spending by itself was bigger than the entire SaaS market. Now, does this mean that you should ignore the enterprise market and not go after it? Absolutely not. The adoption rate is going fairly quickly, and companies increasingly expect their vendors, whether that is a software company or a channel partner, reseller, SI, to offer them both opportunities. They may ultimately decide that they're going to buy on-premise. They may have the intention of buying on-premise, but in order to get shortlisted for that on-premise sale, you have to be able to sit down with your customers and your prospects and show them both opportunities. It's simply not possible today for a software company to be successful over the next 2 to 3 years without having a SaaS offering. Whether or not you sell a lot of it, you still have to have that offer in order to get to the table. So what's the disconnect here? All we hear from the analysts is great growth rates, and you hear these numbers that 30, 40, 50% of enterprises are using SaaS applications. Well, the disconnect is that in the SaaS space, a lot of enterprises are still very concerned about security. They're very concerned about bringing SaaS applications in-house or putting their data on SaaS applications. When you ask individuals, and this is where a lot of the analysts are doing their research, they're asking individuals within enterprises, are you in the cloud? And yep, they are. They're using any number of cloud applications. They're using Skype, they're using Yahoo, they're using Evernote, they're using Dropbox. So yes, by definition, they're in the cloud. But those are individual users within a company. Companies themselves are taking a much slower approach, much more deliberate approach to introducing SaaS as part of their internal IT infrastructure. So what are some of the barriers to adoption in the cloud environment? Again, I have to emphasize that you have to be in the cloud if you're going to be successful over the next 3 to 4 years. If you haven't made the decision now, you need to do it, and you start to look at, even if it's the ASP model, you need to start offering a cloud option to your customers. So what I want to go through now is just the reality that they're faced with when you're selling into the enterprise space. What are the things that you have to overcome? First and foremost, security. Enterprise companies are paranoid about putting their data on a data center or something that's off-site. Reliability and uptime. Every time we hear that the BlackBerry went down or Amazon went down, customers start to wonder, well, how reliable is the cloud? Can I rely on the cloud for my 99.99%? Latency, we talked about that. If it's in a real-time environment, then they need to be able to know that the response time to those applications is very quick. Customization. You are going to be selling your solution into a corporate environment, and they will want to do customization. Very few SaaS applications in a corporate environment just operate out of the box. Salesforce.com, for instance, it is highly customized when it goes into a corporate environment. Either the companies need to change the way they're doing business, or they have to change a lot of the functionality in Salesforce.com to make it work within their company. TCO, and this is a big one, I'll come back to this in the next slide. Total cost of ownership. For large companies, it's a budget issue, not a cash flow issue. And they sit down and they look at the numbers and say, well, does it really make sense for us, or do we get a better return if we purchase the license up front? Data lock-in is a big one. Will they be able to move their data if they decide that they no longer want the SaaS application? How difficult or easy will it be for them to get the data back? Vendor viability. enterprise companies, they went through this blip before. We went through the hype cycle with the dot-com era, and the estimate was that 35% of dot-com applications that were sold into the enterprise space were never installed or didn't work as advertised. So a lot of the ones that are sitting as CTOs, CIOs, they all remember that, and they're very concerned about the vendor viability. Will the company that's selling them the SaaS application be there in 2 years, 3 years? And finally, the Patriot Act. This is outside the United States. Huge barrier to adoption in the corporate space. We'll come back to the Patriot Act in more detail when we cover the legal issues in the last module in this webinar series. So, as I mentioned, for large companies, it's a budget issue more than a cash flow issue. The large companies have money in the bank. They can make the decision of, do we spend this up front or do we buy it over time? And they sit down and they look at the total cost of ownership. Small companies, SMB companies, they don't necessarily have the money in the bank, or they don't want to spend it today, so they're much more likely to pursue the subscription model. And the question for the enterprise customer is, really comes down to lease versus buy. What's the break-even point? If this is a solution that they would normally have installed for 8 years, does it make sense for them to pay for this on a subscription basis, on a perpetual rental model in effect? One of the reasons ERP is not having the breakthrough in the cloud is because of this, because ERP has a normal replacement cycle of 8 years. So the CFO sits down and says, well, gee, we pay for this, and we pay for it in 3 years. Why should we continue to pay these subscription payments for years 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8? And that's if all things are being equal. So you come back to them and you look at, well, what are the arguments, the counter arguments, and it comes down to ease of deployment. The cloud typically is easier to roll out. Personnel costs, they don't have to have the same IT infrastructure, shorter upgrade cycles, and the scalability if they're adding or dropping people. But for the corporate market, there needs to be a compelling economic reason to buy that product, and we'll talk about that in the next few slides. So for a corporate customer, there needs to be a compelling economic reason to buy SaaS. They really do look at the total cost of ownership. So for you, it's very important to target the customers, the usages that are more likely to derive that economic benefit. And this is where we get into workload patterns. There are certain workloads that are much more conducive to SaaS applications, on and off. You see this with Azure. If you're doing project development and you want to just rent space, Azure is perfect for that, and it's the same thing for companies. Companies that are growing fast. This used to be the Zynga model. So Zynga used to outsource all of their stuff to Amazon, and then as they grew and they stabilized at the next level of growth, they started to bring it in-house to their own data center because they found that over time it was less expensive, more reasonable for them to have their own data center, and they used Amazon as that offloading the excess capacity. We're seeing this in the corporate environment as well with Azure. A lot of companies maintain their own data center, and then they use Azure for the incremental growth. And then we have bursting, unpredictable bursting and predictable bursting. Unpredictable bursting is where there's a sudden event happening that requires a lot of computing cycles within the company, then it's great to be able to use the cloud because it's a lot less expensive than having excess capacity sitting in-house. Predictable bursting, typical there is seasonality, Christmas time. This is why Amazon got into the cloud business. 90% of their compute cycles were run during the Christmas rush. They had all of this iron, all of this empty capacity sitting there the rest of the year. They decided to start renting it out. So if you look at the workload patterns for different industries or for different types of applications, where you're most likely to have that economic benefit for a customer is where you can offload those peaks, where they can reduce the capacity that they need in order to handle some spike in business on a monthly, quarterly, or annual basis. I'm going to take you through just a little exercise on how you can position your cloud application or how you can identify the market segments or customers, target customers, that are most likely to buy your product. When you are positioning your product, you have to look at what's important to your client. And when customers are comparing on-premise versus the cloud, some of the things that they typically look at are security, reliability, the user interface quality, flexibility, that's the seasonality, the variability, CapEx versus OpEx, capital expenditure versus operating expenditures, and mobility. So they'll look at these types. We're just using these as examples. So what you want to do from a segmentation and a marketing standpoint is to match up the benefits that your clients are looking for with the benefits that you're offering through your cloud solution. And I'll show you how we do this. And you can do this in Excel. We call it a cloud spider because that's the graph that comes out of this. But if you go into Excel and you look at what the drivers are for a particular market segment, then you can look at what the level of importance is for your customer. And the examples that we use here, security, for example, what we're seeing increasingly in the enterprise space, that companies are accepting the fact that Microsoft is a very secure platform. So where security is important, where this is a level 5 for the customer and their requirements, they see the cloud, especially Azure, delivering a 5. Flexibility. This could be the seasonality. If you're selling to a manufacturer that has the same employee base month in, month out, not a lot of seasonality, not a lot of variability in their usage patterns, then for them, the importance is a 2, and where the cloud delivers a 5. So as you build in this and you compare the different features and functionality and the requirements and the needs of your customer, put this into a little Excel graph, a little chart, and you can actually map out where the overlap is, where the overlay is between the benefits that you're providing as a cloud application and the benefits that your customers require. It also allows you to focus on the features that are most important and where you match up most closely. So you look at where your customers need a 5 and the cloud delivers a 5. In the small business space, for example, financial flexibility, CapEx versus OpEx, the fact that they can spend the money on a monthly basis, that's a 5 to them, and that's where the cloud delivers a 5. So it's really important to identify by market segment who is going to be most receptive to a cloud application. Remember the statistic I gave you a little bit earlier, 95% of the spending is still on on-premise software, which means that 5% of the market is really your target. So it's really important to identify who are those 5%, what are the drivers that are going to be most, that are make it more likely that they are going to buy your solution. So now I want to take you through very quickly a business modeling tool, an online business modeling tool that Microsoft has developed to help their ISVs transition their business models from on-prem to the cloud. It's a very comprehensive tool that covers every aspect of a cloud business. You can see, if you can see the slides, it goes through your pricing structure as well as the Azure consumption cost. It goes through customer segmentation, go-to-market cost, goes through all of the different go-to-market strategies from fully automated through telesales to direct sales through partners, and you can build in the different assumptions and the compensation structure, and you can build in churn rate and what your technical operation costs are. All of that feeds into a very detailed 4-year monthly P&L. And then you can play with the assumptions. You can change your pricing structure, you can change your customer segmentation, you can change your churn ratios, you can change your go-to-market strategies, and you'll see immediately what the impact on your business will be. It is a fairly comprehensive tool. Once you get into it, it's fairly easy to use, but it's still comprehensive, so it can't be a self-service tool. Microsoft is making this available exclusively to Microsoft partners through a 3-hour tutorial with us. In this tutorial, we'll set you up with your own user ID so that you can access the tool. We'll start populating the tool. We'll take you through all the different elements of it and identify the elements of the tool that are most relevant to you, and we'll answer any questions that you have. You can register for this by logging on to our website. In the bottom right-hand corner of the opening page, there will be a direct link to the tool. You can register, put in your information, you'll get an invoice, and then we'll schedule a call with you. And I do want to remind you that this is part of a series of webinars. Don't worry if you've missed the earlier webinars. You can still log on and see this as a streaming video. We've talked in the first one about the changing business operations, the strategic decisions that you need to make as a company. Today we talked about the target markets. In the next video, we'll be talking about your sales and marketing strategy. Then we'll move into the pricing consideration. How do you set pricing for your product when you move from on-prem to the cloud? The financial metrics, how do you measure performance on an ongoing basis? What are the metrics that are most important? And then finally, we'll end up with the legal issues that are specific to the cloud. Here's my contact information. Feel free to send me an email or to give me a call if you have any questions that I can help you with. And now we have the Q&A. You'll see that there will be a window for you to ask questions. So if you're doing this live, please feel free to fire away. I'll be here to answer your questions. And thank you very much for your time.